Okay, good evening. Welcome back to our learning at Sha'arei. We are learning Lilui Nishmas on the Zeichen Nishmas of Miriam Frill, Miriam Baschai Mitzchak, Allah HaShalom, Meher Nisham, have a continuous aliyah in the merit of our Torah learning. So just one word of Chizek, and I actually heard the Shir, but I didn't consider the point that Esther just brought out. I listened to the Shir this morning on my drive back from Brooklyn, so Rav Shai Shechter's been teaching Pirkei Avos for a while, and he says, you know, it's been for a few months. Esther just reminded me, and she applied it to our Shir, which I didn't even think of, and he says it's taking much longer than expected. They're still in, like, Perek Aleph. They thought they would have made a lot more faster progress, but it's taking so long. He says there's so much to say, but he says his father, Shlitzer Perishal Shechter, told him it's a zchus for Arichus Yamim, because it's taking so long, Hashem will give you the long life to finish the Sefer. So there you go. Okay, so we are really on page...
I was thinking, but it doesn't mean we have to stretch it out for another 120.
But Baruch Hashem, you know what? Should be a continued schus.
No, exactly.
Should be a continued schus. Page 178, but what I want to do is, right, page 178, is that what you have? I know, we really are. Are we on page 178? Okay,
yes,
but what I want to do, I just wanted to close out page 177 with a story, really, an idea, an insight from Risa Rahman's book, Teran Amuna in Har Nov. So let's just read the end of this previous chapter, especially because we have not met in 3 weeks. So let's go to the page bottom of page 176. There was a well-known incident involving the Rebbe of Chaim of Sanzatza when he was returning from, bottom page 176, when he was returning from the funeral of his son. He appeared happy. He was asked about this. He responded with an example. Man is walking on the street. Suddenly someone slaps him on the shoulder, top page 177. He flinches. He turns to see. Behold, it was his close friend, a sign of closeness. You must learn to feel close to Hashem, whether he's giving reward or punishment. Life has pleasant as well as difficult times. They can all be utilized to enhance our closeness with Hashem. May Hashem help us to become close to him in every stage and situation, cleave to him at all times. So it's interesting. I actually wanted to quote from Risa Rahman's book before I went to Eretz Yisrael, and I didn't get a chance, so I figured I would pick up here. Meanwhile, in Eretz Yisrael, I met Risa Rahman. Some of you may have listened to the shir. She arranged for me to give a shir in Har Nof. Risa's husband, Zichrono Livracha, Hashem Yikom Damo, Chaim / Howie Rahman, was one of the Har Nof Kedoshim. You might expect that the shir that I gave was in memory of her husband. In fact, it was in memory of her son. Her son, Eli, Alav HaShalom, was Nifter. It's coming up to his 14th year site on the 13th of Tammuz, and she wanted to share a memory of her son. So here is a woman whose son was Nifter, Hashem Yirachem Aleinu, and about 10 years after, a little less, her husband, Rachmana Litzlan, was taken in a very brutal misa, Al Kiddush Hashem. She drove me by the shul. I spent an hour in her apartment first before the shul. I went a little earlier to meet her. And we drove by the shul, and she stopped in front of it, and she said, you see the bullet holes in the door, and she explained to me where the attack was. Now, this wasn't a tour guide telling me as a point of historical interest. Her husband was in the shul. She said it was on the first floor, why the attackers went into this minion as opposed to a different minion. Someone was doing a different minion, and she stopped for a few minutes. She was talking to me about it, and when you meet her, she's a Simchas Hachayim and a beautiful smile and an upbeat nature and easy to talk to. And I saw some of the children in her apartment, and can I know she has grandchildren? And I don't know what to say. We also met the Hankins. The connection with Hankin is through Sarah Bergman. Rabbi Hankin.
What? Hannah
Hankin
was my classmate.
Oh.
Also with Sarah Bergman.
Right. So Sarah Bergman's been very in touch, close with her since childhood. She originally made the connection with us. We went to see them one evening as well, her and her husband. She showed us the Cheder HaSfarim. They have some Sfarim. My boys were very interested from his grandfather. His grandfather was Rav Eliyahu Hankin. He was a Gadol Hadar around the time of, he preceded Moshe, Rav Moshe Feinstein in America. His grandfather, Rav Eliyahu Hankin, was one of the Gadoli, America, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. He was the posek before Rav Moshe Feinstein. They have some Sfarim from their grandfather, from his grandfather. One Sefer she showed us was over 500 years old. It has the date of printing of when it was printed in Europe, and there's a picture of their children on a bulletin board, and their eldest grandson from this couple just was bar mitzvahed.
The same age as their boys.
What?
The same age as their boys.
Yes, the grandchildren were there. We didn't meet the grandchildren. It was very late at night after we went to the Dome in Bnei Brak, and then And this is where we're coming back to. And a person, a real gadol, learns to feel close to Hashem, whether he's given a reward or whether he's given a punishment. This week's parasha in Chutz is chukas. Moshe Rabbeinu is told, you do not believe in me. Maybe it's difficult for us to comprehend this. So Hashem said, you're telling Moshe you didn't believe in me to make a kiddush Hashem. Therefore, you're not going into Eretz Yisrael. Life has pleasant as well as difficult times. There was a rabbi, Ruvein, what's his last name? Bauman? Missing off the coast of Virginia, and we don't know. But we have to utilize every life situation to enhance our closeness with Hashem. And it's something that, especially when you go to Eretz Yisrael and you meet people in such a matzav, who continue to be Yerei Shamayim and Limudei Torah and living lives of Torah despite such circumstances, and we are reminded that Hashem has to help us become close to Him. It's very to be there to talk to these regular people who are also Gedolim. Not only Gedolim and Bnei Brak, those regular people who find Hashem and who cling to Hashem in such times. Hankins gave us a picture. She said her children, they didn't have a lot of money, she said, at all. Her son just learned the kollel. He didn't take a stipend, so they had an idea. He liked to take pictures of different places in Eretz Yisrael. And she was Na'ama graphic design. So they made these long rectangular like poster boards that they thought that they would sell for Parnassa. So she gave me one. I need to just got back Sunday night. It's been very busy. Take it to be framed. It's a like a panorama view of the Kotel with a pasuk from Divrei Hayamim that here Hashem will hear all tefillos. And she said they never, you know, ended up selling them and making Parnassa from them. But you see people who are so close to Hashem, and number one, it makes you feel like such a small person. It really does. It makes you feel like this teeny minuscule person. Number two, no one should ever be tested. Number three, it's a reminder that the world is really Na'alam. It really is Olam. It's a hidden world. We don't understand. And we can find Hashem in all times. And I really did. This is, and this says Risar Amin, page 215, 217. That was written before I went to Eretz Yisrael. I haven't gone to Eretz Yisrael. And the Levine family, another one of the Harnov Kedoshim, just made a wedding, actually. I was not at the wedding, but Risa told me they were making a wedding. It was a very big simcha. So I'm just going to quote from Risa's book. And then we will... By the way, if you didn't read the book, you should. Risa said they didn't sell so many copies. I was very surprised. It's very kedai to read. There's a lot to learn. Besides what I tell you, there's a lot to learn. I don't work for them. I'm not going to make any money. Chas v'shalom, but... Okay. The doctor called me out to speak to her. In her gentle way, she explained, in addition to his breathing issues, high fever and diarrhea, Chaim's potassium levels were fluctuating dangerously. She looked me straight in the eye and she sighed. I am not American, she said with her Brazilian accent. I just can't be blunt about these things. But I hope nothing will happen over the Yom Tov period. We will do our best. I hope you understand. Did I understand? Did I understand anything? Did I understand the attack itself? Did I understand Chaim's injuries, the coma, the infection? Did I understand that I was married and didn't have a husband? What do I understand? I understand that I live in each moment. I understand that right now Chaim is very unwell and things could turn for the worse. There is a master plan. She has that in capillaries. I only hope I get my role right. I walked back into the small room with Chaim lying in the confined corner. And Shlomi, the proud father, the new baby, sitting by his side. I'm skipping a little. Her grandson has a bris. Chaim is lying flat on a bed, connected to machinery, looking more helpless than ever. I burst out crying. Was my atypical outburst a result of the wretched experience of the last week? Was it the crazy mixture of running from a family celebration, her grandson's bris, to something so startled. I just can't say it. Startlingly opposite. Was it the doctor's somber warning? It was a combination of everything. The staff told us they were taking care of him. They would call us in when we were ready. Also, you have to remember that her husband was in this situation for almost exactly a year. The attack was in Cheshvan, and he was nifter the following Cheshvan. Chaim stopped breathing. They explained Chaim stopped breathing, but he never lost a pulse. Anyway. Friends throughout the neighborhood were so concerned. Whoever could came running to the hospital. How were we? How was Chaim? Every so often I looked down at myself and I realized I was still wearing my nice clothing from the bris. And I would think, how macabre, is that how you say that?
Macabre.
What?
Macabre. You don't really pronounce the R, it's French.
Oh, okay. How macabre?
That's okay.
Here I am, all dressed up. I'm sorry, I'm not trying to ruin the vignette at all. Sorry, I'm not doing such a good job. Here I am, all dressed nicely, when he is in such a terrible state. The plan was to put Chaim in geriatrics. He was there for 2 hours. They decided he's too young. He can't stay there. Where do we even put such a person? They moved him to what became his last station on this journey, internal medicine. Jeff and Debbie, her husband's brother, had a long trip back home to north. They live in the north. They ended up leaving before Chaim was transferred and settled. One nurse listened to me rant. I think you could use a cup of tea. I'll go get you one. That sweet cup of tea did more for me than a 4-course banquet. I was told this was the best ward in the whole hospital. My experience was overall as positive as could be. I was in contact with the community. People would stay with Chaim so I could go home. Things sounded calm in the house. After my son Ellie passed away, and again, Risa wanted to share in her notes to be in memory. If you look on my utorial, you'll see that it says who it's in memory of. After my son Ellie passed away, Risa writes, I used to quip when asked my age. I am 40 years old plus another 100 years. Anyone who knew about Ellie usually got it pretty quickly. Anyone who didn't just thought I was weird. After the terror attack, I would announce to one and all, I just added to my life another 1,000 years. This last episode, running from the celebration of the bris to seeing Chaim in such a vulnerable and sick state, definitely added another 200 years. Okay, let us go on. Page 178, please. Does anyone have questions or comments? Okay, page 178, okay? Fear due to perfection and building of the world. Still talking about Yiras Hashem and Yiras Shamayim. Fear due to honor for rare individuals only. So now he's going to talk about a very brief category, which he's really going to actually skip over, but I will comment based on Pirkei Avos, okay? You've explained there are 5 levels of yira, reverence, godly reverence. Fear of punishment, we spoke about that. Fear of losing honor, fear of not attaining perfection. Fear due to Hashem's greatness, and fear of sin. In the last 2 chapters, we elaborate on the first level, fear of punishment. Okay. The second level, fear of losing honor, is somewhat similar to fear of punishment, just as with fear. And a person could understand this, even if you're not talking about Gehenna, you could understand it here. A person in this world does not like, if a person has honor in this world. So it's human nature that they do not want to lose the honor that they have. That's how human beings are. If you've reached a certain stature, you don't want to lose that honor. Just as with fear of punishment, it's naturally difficult to fear Gehenna, because Gehenna is not sensed by the body, and this is true, but only by the soul. You know, there are certain things. This is maybe difficult for us to understand, but when you go to Eretz Yisrael, this becomes crystal clear. Lahavda, what do I mean? We're having a conversation with the kids, bar mitzvah boys have never been. What's more beautiful? For example, I hope everyone here I think everyone here has been to Eretz Yisrael. What's more beautiful? When you drive from Yerushalayim to Tel Aviv, so there are hills, Yerushalayim Harim Saviv La, Vashem Saviv La Amam, and they're rocky, and there's some scrubby bushes. What's more beautiful? That or New Zealand? Which is supposed to be the most beautiful place in the world. That's more beautiful. That at the same time that I was in there, I saw a couple of women who come to different class, family pictures are in the Canadian Rockies. And really, like if I show you the pictures, it's like I've never been there. That's more beautiful. So my boy said, I could understand that those things are more beautiful. But I said, so how come in Eretz Yisrael, every flower, every tree, it's so beautiful? Here, when I look out the window, I don't pass every single tree and say, wow, look at that tree. It's nice. Hashem made trees. We have shade. It gives us fruit. Why? Because I said to the kids, and this is so true, because Eretz Yisrael speaks to your neshama. It does not speak to your guf. You may never have been there before. I was speaking to somebody before we went, not observant. You're religious. And they went to Israel for the first time in a very, very long time recently, like many, many decades. And they said, you feel so proud when you're there. Why? Because what does it speak to? It speaks to your neshama. So what's more beautiful? If you show a person that rocky mountain with a few low bushes, and you ask them, what's more beautiful, that and the Canadian Rockies? So some people will say that because externally, objectively, on the level of the guf, that is more beautiful. But on the level of the neshama, it's a whole different language. It's a whole different language. One of the boys looking out the window, planes. I mean, it's almost not worth it, chas v'shalom, for me to go to Eretz Yisrael because it's so hard for me to leave. This is a time of a child, but one of the boys who'd never been, I was crying, Nebuch, and the plane takes off, and you're trying to see out your window for as long as possible to see the shore, and he was crying, and as it speaks to you, it's a whole different language. So the Havdil, Gehenim, speaks to the Neshama. That's what we need to understand. This. That's exactly what he writes here. Gehenim is not sensed by the body. Just like my body, just like I perceive Eretz Yisrael's mountains are more beautiful than New Zealand. Objectively, is it actually more beautiful? Externally, is it more beautiful? No, you would not show anyone that and show anyone that. Externally, I'm not talking about, don't go like this, I'm not talking about internally, I'm talking about externally. Externally, I'll show you the pictures that they sent me from the Canadian Rockies. You can't say that externally, the shrub on the mountain is more beautiful. But if you ask what's more beautiful and where I would rather be, hey, where I would rather be, why? Because there are certain things that only speak to your neshama. One of those things, not to compare Gehenim to Eretz Yisrael, but I guess we can. Hashem made both of them. And it can help us understand this. So this trip to Eretz Yisrael crystallized so many things for me. Gehenim is not sensed by the body. It's only sensed by the soul. So it's a different language. So when we were struggling with this topic of Gehenim, before we clarify, based on the Shiur of Rav Shai Shechter and then the Pirkei Avos that we looked at, we're struggling with it because we're talking about Gehenim in the language of the guf, external. You can't talk about the punishment in Gehenim on the language of externality. Why not? It's a whole different language. The guf does not understand this language. The neshama understands this language. So it is with the honor in Gan Eden. So Gehenim and Gan Eden are experienced on the level of neshama. What's more beautiful? Eretz Yisrael and New Zealand. What would you say? It's not a trick question, by the way. It's okay if you say something else.
New Zealand.
New Zealand. So sometimes we say New Zealand, sometimes we say Eretz Yisrael. How? Because there's two different languages. So we have to understand, to help us crystallize and clarify, like Rav Shai said, there's nothing wrong with talking about this. But we have to know what level and what language we have to use to talk about it. The level of chitzonius is not going to mean anything. Of course we're going to struggle. We're talking the wrong language. You're trying to do a math problem by talking about science, or I don't know if that even works, by talking about some of this math and science. Yes?
It's almost like assigning value to something.
It's almost like?
Assigning value to something that has a quantifiable value, that this is an expense. So let's say it's an expensive gem versus something that has very sentimental value. Let's say it's been a family heirloom and it's not monetarily very valuable, but it has a very deep personal connection.
So
you can kind of say like, okay, objectively speaking, maybe like a different place is more aesthetically, you know, on the scale of beauty, that scores higher, but on an emotional connection.
Okay, very nice. It works with the family heirloom or the jewelry. There might be objectively a piece of jewelry in Tiffany that's very, very gorgeous in the window, but this, I got from my Smith and I just all speaks to me more personally. Is it expensive? Can you compare it to that? No, but it speaks to me a different way. Okay? So we have to come to the level where we talk Neshama, Gehenim, Gan Eden. That's the right language. So I think that's the problem. I think we have a barrier because we're talking about the wrong language with the wrong approach. Let's go inside. Is everyone clear? Is it clear what I'm saying? Yes or no? Answer. Yes? Okay. Just as with fear of punishment, second sentence in the second paragraph. Just as with fear of punishment, it is naturally difficult to fear Gehenim, because Gehenim is not sensed by the body, by the soul, we just explained this. So it is with the honor. In Gan Eden, Gan Eden is intangible. It can only be perceived by the soul, not the body. Hence, to attain that level as well, you need to utilize the imaginative faculty. So it's not just that we can't sense Gehenim. The truth is that we also can't sense what? Gan Eden means either. We really don't. We talk about it, but we don't really have an understanding on the level from Olam Hazeh of what this means. There are some mere individuals who naturally have a very strong desire for honor. It is easier for them to attain the fear based on honor, even without imagery. It actually reminds me, I don't know if he means that as a positive or a negative, but I think a strong desire for honor is a negative. And who did that remind me of? We just had the parasha. Exactly. It totally reminded me of Koch. What did you say?
Koch.
Yeah. It reminded me exactly of... Pardon?
I
can't hear. Someone closer, help me.
I thought of somebody else.
I thought of someone else.
Yeah.
Someone in the political world. So I don't want to mention the name.
Let's not talk politics.
Sasha and I?
Yeah. In politics.
We're not.
Oh, okay. Let's stay far away from politics. I really try very hard, by the way, my classes, to talk us stay far away from my classes. No, you should know, I really try and stay far away from politics. First of all, it's not deserving of mention, usually in a Torah class. Second of all, I try and stay, just in general, it's interesting, purposely, I try, I'm not always, but I try to be apolitical, because Torah should be available to everybody, and not everybody shares the same views in politics, and sometimes it could get very heated. It goes back to Korach, I guess. Right? He was also politically motivated. He was the first, you could say, sly politician. What did he want? He was driven by kina, taiva, and kavod. And what are politicians today driven by? Kina, taiva? Is any different? Who was the first politician? So Rabbi Elazar HaKapar Omer, Rabbi Elazar HaKapar says, Hakina va taiva va kavod motzin esa adam mina olam. A prime example of this is who? Korach, who had, quote, a very strong desire for honor. Interestingly, remember the last time we did Pirkei Avos based on the last Mishnah in Perek Dalet. Against your will, you're created. Against your will, you're born. In that order, against your will, you live. We had a whole shir on that. That is the Mishnah that follows. That was also Rabbi Elazar HaKapar. So Rabbi Elazar HaKapar says, Hakina v'hatayva v'hakavod motzin esa adam min ha'olam. It takes a person out of this world. So in Korach's case, it literally took a person out of the world. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein says on this Mishnah, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein says, we usually take this to understand that it takes a person out of the next world. Kina taiva v'kavod removes a person from Olam Haba and sends him to Gehenim. But Rav Aaron Lichtenstein Zatzal says, I think anybody who knows anyone consumed with kina taiva and kavod knows that they take themselves out of this world as well. And the Rambam writes in Hilchos Deos Perek Beis, the Rambam, Maimonides writes in Hilchos Deos Perek Beis and Mishnah Torah, he writes that someone who's a Baal Ka'as, Hachayim Ein Chayim, his life is not life. Someone with negative midos, negative character traits, like a Baal Gaiva or a Baal Ka'as, his life is not life. So it's not only that he takes himself out of the next world. What does he take himself? What's the quality of life? A person who is consumed with rage, like Korach. A person who is consumed with desire for honor. A person who is like the politicians. What kind of life, Rachman al-Tzan, do they have? Rabbi Shamshon Falhirsch says, God caused man to live in this world and made him fit for this world. Hashem made a match between us and this world. It's only in connection with this world and through utilizing our energies and the welfare that man fulfills his purpose. However, one who is consumed with kina, taiva, and kavod makes selfish interest the sole purpose of his life. So then he's not fulfilling the tafkid for which he was created. For him, the world only has value as long as it will cater to his desires. If it's good for me, then it's good for everyone else. And if it's bad for me, then it must be bad for everyone else. He forfeits the destiny for which God made him. Such a person has value in this world, sees value in this world, only as long as it will cater to his desires. That's exactly what Korach was. There was only value to this world if he could be in charge on some level. How could Moshe be the chief rabbi and Aaron be the Kohen Gadol? Is what the Gemara says, what his wife told him. And the sons of Aaron, the Sagan Kohi, the deputy to the priest. And what am I, only a Levi? He was consumed with desiring what other people have. And it's something that we learned in this Sefer. One of the most powerful things I think I learned in the Sefer, besides for the whole life hashkafa, and it changes our hashkafa, I hope, of all of us in our life mahalach, is we learned here years ago, inside every person is every biblical personality. I wish I would have written down what page it's on. I don't remember. Does anyone remember when we learned that? It stuck with me, and it's very meaningful, because that means there's a Korach inside every one of us. There's also a Moshe Rabbeinu inside every one of us. There's also a Aaron and his Ahava Shalom, and there's Paro and his Baal Gaiva, and it's inside every single one of us. There are some mere individuals who naturally have a very strong desire for honor. For them, they could attain fear based on honor without imagery, because it doesn't have to be on the level of your neshama. You know what it means to desire honor. On the other hand, there are some people who flee from honor. One of them, for example, was Rav Aaron Leib Steinman, Zecher Tzadik Kadosh Bracha. Rav Aaron Leib Steinman lived at, what was his address? Who remembers? Chazon Ish 5 in Bnei Brak. So we went to Rabbitzin Yisraelzen. Rabbitzin Yisraelzen was her dancer's neighbor. Who is she? Does anyone remember? Her family name is listed in many of the Gadol biographies. Why? excuse me, she's a sister of Robertson Kanievsky, Allah Hasham. Her sister was Robertson Batsheva, which means her father was Rav Eliashiv, her grandfather was Rav Ari Levine. She said, growing up, it was always, shh, Abba lo meid, shh, Abba lo meid. She said about her father, Zatzal Rav Eliashiv, that his birth was a malam in a teva. His parents were told they were never had children. His life was a malam in a teva, and his learning was a malam in a teva. It was unbelievable. We spent about 15 minutes with her. It was really unbelievable. So Rav Steinman was her downstairs neighbor, okay? So Rav Steinman is the opposite of a Korach HaRasha. Rav Steinman is someone who has no desire for any honor at all. One day an open letter full of insults and mockery was left at Rav Aaron Leib's home. His student, Rav Yitzchak Levinstein, horrified, tore up the letter to shreds. Yitzchak, what are you ripping? Said Rav Aaron Leib. It's a letter of nonsense. It's all insults. How do we feel when we're insulted? I know, but I'm a normal human being. How do I feel when I'm insulted? I feel hurt. I feel embarrassed. I feel ashamed. I don't like it. I'm being honest with you. Do you like when somebody insults you? Does it feel good when you're spared, when you're shamed? You don't feel good. Let's be honest. I don't like it. Please let me see whatever is left of Aaron Leib. These are the best letters I receive. They take away from any kavod I am shown when I travel abroad. He frequently repeated what the Vilna Gaon said about the words we utter in Shemona Esrei. V'nafshi ka'afra la'kol tihyeh. My soul should be like dust to all. Only after we say, Pesach li b'bisar secha. Open my heart to your Torah. First, one must be humble. V'nafshi ka'afra la'kol tihyeh. And then, only then, can you have your heart open to Torah. Rav Aaron Leib explained in his Sefer Ayalas HaShachar, a person is called Adam because he was created from earth. Man is called by this name as a constant reminder that he should act humbly. Even when someone shames him, he doesn't need to run after cover. Now again, I'm not going to be practical. Eitzah, if you're in a difficult situation and you really don't know what to do, seek professional help. I'm not talking about extreme situations where you really need professional help. It's very hard to be insulted and see it as a compliment. He said it would detract from his, any honor he was given would detract from his Olam Haba. So this is the antithesis of a Korach. This is a person who is almost Rabbeinu, Ish Moshe Anav Mod Mikol Adam Masha'al Pnei HaAdama. One time they sprayed graffiti outside mocking the Rosh Hashiva on the walls of his residence. And some certain people, Tamidim, paid to have it cleaned up. When he came into the house, he was surprised. He says, what happened to the graffiti? What happened to the writing that was on my house earlier? It's just a simple, small, you can't say apartment building. It's like a 3-4 house on a main street in Bnei Brak. This is where it's on a main street. Has anyone been? Chazon Ish 5. She lives at like the top floor. When Avraham Leib came home, he says he wants to know where the graffiti is. So they said they cleaned it up. So he said, Avraham Leib said, it bothered me, but I am very happy there were derogatory things written about me. 4 years earlier, when I was in America, there were several occasions when I was publicly honored. I appreciated being shamed in public to counter the public honor bestowed upon me in America. Am I saying that this is a level that we can reach, or that I don't think it's possible. But you should know that there is such a level, there is such a degree as someone who totally runs from one, who's completely not interested. In fact, I went to Rav Shai Shachter say a few years ago about his father, Rav Shai Shachter Shlita. His humility is not even within my ability. He said his level of humility is not even within my ability. There are people like a Korach, and there are people like a Moshe, and they're the opposite of each other. And if we have both traits, which we do, the Sefer says, I think it's brilliant that every biblical personality is inside of us, so we have to ask, what do we have more? Okay? There are some rare individuals who have a naturally strong desire for honor. It's easy for them to attain the fear based on honor, even without imagery. Does anyone have questions or comments? Okay. But with most people, I'm on the bottom page, 178. The desire for honor is not so apparent. They can only attain fear based on the honor of Gan Eden if they use imagery. So once again, you have to go back to using a different language. Yet, why do you need imagery? Because we live in a world of guf, more guf than neshama. It's such a physical world. It's so hard for us to imagine something that's kulo neshama level. Yet since we have said the imaginative faculty is weak with most people in general, it may be said one should not work too much with this kind of yira. I also find, I don't know if you want to call it imaginative faculty or the language of the neshama, which might be a better term, I find it so much stronger in Eretz Yisrael. So much more apparent. Things are so much more crystal clear. You feel the Rambam, the Ramban writes this, Beferush, in Vayikra, Perek Yud Ches, Psukim Chav Dalet through Chav Hey, the Rambam writes Beferush. It's a very long Ramban. Do I keep saying the Rambam? The Ramban. The Ramban writes that in Chutz Haaretz, there are like Sar V'Shofi, there are heavenly ministers ministering over that country or over that land, and then Hashem is on top of them. So in America, there is the super, heavenly superpower of, I'm not really being a joke, Captain America over America, and then there is the Ribbono Shel Olam. In Australia, you could go look up the Ramban, has its superpower. Over Eretz Yisrael, the Ramban says, there is no intermediary. There is only the Ribbono Shel Olam. I mean, you feel that when you're there. You don't feel the Mechitas HaBarzel. You don't feel the iron barrier between us and the Ribbono Shel Olam. You don't. When you stand in Eretz Yisrael and say V'shalayim Yircha Barachim Tashuv, and then Nebuch, I stand in Woodmere and I say V'shalayim Yircha Barachim Tashuv, doesn't feel the same. When I make a simple Al Ha'etz in Eretz Yisrael, V'al Tenuva Sasada V'ar Atzchem D'atov V'rachav V'sanzom in Eretz Yisrael, I can't even finish. I have to stop in the middle because I get so choked up. And here I eat the grapes from California and I thank Hashem and I'm very happy to have them. And Baruch Hashem, we have sustenance. But there is a difference. And the imaginative faculty where the language of the Neshama is so heightened in Eretz Yisrael. Because it's a different language. Let's go. Since we have said the imaginative faculty is weak with most people in general, maybe said one should not work too much with this kind of yira. If you are able to, that is wonderful. But you will need a lot of time for it. So first, attain the simple fear of punishment. That's something I think we could all attain, the fear of punishment. And then skip to fear based on perfection. Certainly there is danger whenever a level is skipped. He's skipping a level. Nevertheless, it's relatively difficult to attain fear based on honor. It requires significant investment of time, since excessive involvement with one's honor can cause more harm than benefit. You see, don't work too much on cultivating this idea of kavod, because what happens? You're going to end up chas v'shalom to the extreme like Korach, stay away. We'll skip to the next stage. Fear based on perfection. Okay. Everyone's with me. Questions or comments? Next section. Awareness and desire bring one to fear based on perfection. Fear based on perfection means a person desires and yearns to be perfect. And we have an image of ourselves, certainly perhaps when we're younger, of what perfection means. And then you go through life. And you get older, and you have experiences, and you really have to ask yourself, what is perfection anyway? What is perfect for one person is not perfect for the next person. What does perfection mean? Is there such a thing as perfection?
It's only because Hashem is perfect. So
say it again.
Hashem is the only, that's the only thing that's perfect. So,
and everything else is in some way flawed.
Yeah.
There is no perfection. What is perfection? The Ramchal, oh, we went to his kever. He's buried. Has anyone been?
Yeah.
Okay, right next to, if you remember, right next to who? His tzion is right next to. Does anyone remember? Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva. You were there?
Probably, yeah.
So he's right next to Rabbi Akiva. So I said to one of my kids, what did he do? 1700s, I believe, the Ramchal. One of the greatest Bali Musa, the Masilas Yesharim. What did he do to merit being next to Rabbi Akiva? Unbelievable. Okay, the Ramchal is already taught in the first chat. It's in the north. We spent one day in the north going to all different kfarim.
Near Tveria, is it?
New- yeah, yeah. We went to Amuka. I think I was never there. Who's buried in Amuka? Who knows? Everyone knows Amuka.
Who?
Ah, very nice. Yonasan Ben Uziel. So I don't think I was ever in Amuka in my life. And Rabbi Yonasan Ben Uziel.
Sure. A lot of these kfarim, I don't know whether there's 100%.
That's what they say.
If it is, that's what the Masorah is.
No, I'm just saying, there is, but I...
So interesting, we went to Kever Shmuel Hanavi, Nebi Samuel, on a different tour, on a different day, a more educational tour of Yerushalayim. So I asked the guide, is this really where Shmuel Hanavi is buried? So what did he say? It's a machokes. There are those who say yes, and there are those who say no. This is the Masorah. So Rabbi Yonasan Ben Uzi, I was very interested. He's a commentator on Chumash, and I often an Aramaic, very Midrashic commentator on Chumash. And I did ask the guy as a point of interest, why do people have a tradition to daven there specifically for a shirach? Does anyone know?
I think because it's so hard to get to it. He said if anyone would come to To
make the tircha?
Yeah.
Okay, so the guide said, he was excellent, the guide on this two-day tour, he said he was never married. Oh, so you knew this. He was never married. So since he was never married, he understands and he will daven for anyone who is in that situation. But it is so hard to get there. It's funny you're saying that because I asked him, how did they get here in the olden days? Today we have buses. Okay, it's a one-lane road on the side of a cliff. It's a little scary. I said, how did they get here back then? They picked this random spot in a valley, Mima Amakim, Amuka. You go down to the depths. So I asked that. So he says they were used to things we weren't used to. They were used to travel on donkey. They were used to mountains. Okay. The Ramchal, why did I mention that? Because I was at the Ramchal's Tzion. The Ramchal is already taught in the first chapter of Mesillas Yesharim. The only true perfection there, you go like you just said, Shani, is attachment to Hashem. Why? Because if Hashem is perfect, the only way to achieve perfection is by attachment through Hashem. All the ways we measure perfection, Rachman al-Tzion, we live in such a gashmistic society, how do we measure perfection? A lot of times we measure perfection by...
Status.
Status. I was going to say social status. Wealth, economic status. If a person is successful, they're usually somebody who is wealthy, who has struck a big in the business world. Maybe they have a big home, maybe they have three homes, maybe they have fancy cars. Who says that's perfection? Rabbitson Yisrael Elson, I told her I make, Rabbitson, I didn't know what to tell. We were there for like 50 minutes. It's like a long time. Like when the mentor went to Rav Chaim, it's like in, you get the bracha, and out. She's at a stand, she's talking to us. So I told her, she's Rabbitson Batsheva, Elsham's sister. So our liaison, the person who took us, said, do you want to tell her anything? So I said, I make Rabbitson Batsheva Kanievsky's challah recipe. So she, from the Beis Yaakov Kosher, she looked at me like I was crazy. I'm sure this woman has never looked at a cookbook in her life. So she didn't know what I was talking about. So she says, Einli Tanur? The Steinman, Zecher Tzadik, and Mevrecha also did not have a tanur. She says, I have a burner. So I said, and I was so happy all my kids were there. I was happy me and my daughter were there because if it wouldn't have been with us, they would have just gone to Gedolim. But because we were there, we went to her, and we went to Rabbitson Kaldetsky, and both of these women see the men also. So I understand the Gedolim are holding up the world with their Torah, but this is more interpersonal. We had 10 minutes with Rabbitson Kaldetsky in between, I would say 15, 20 minutes with Rabbitson Elson. She says, Eini Tanura. So my kids were there, so I said, what do you do for challah? What do you do? I don't know what she does now, where she eats that. She says, we would buy challah. So I said, and my kids were there, I said, Anashim gdolim ochlim challah, b'glal shezeh mitzvat Shabbat. We had to talk to her in either Hebrew or Yiddish, and Yiddish was out for me, so it was Hebrew. I said, Anashim gdolim ochlim challah, b'glal shezeh mitzvat Shabbat, l'chol challah. Anashim tanim kamonu ochlim challah, b'glal shezeh ta'im tov. Why do we challah? Because it tastes good. La ma'isa. Why? I mean, I know it's a mitzvah. We could all say that. It's a mitzvah. It's not a mishnah. I know. Let's be realistic. We like how it tastes. Unless you're gluten-free and you start bringing me all kinds of excuses. If we want to be honest, the challah tastes good. All right, is anyone here only eating the challah because it's a mitzvah, like a mishnah, to remember the man, parashas b'shalach, perek, tazayin? I don't think so. I could be wrong. Maybe you're on a different level. But la maisa, we like how it tastes. It's okay, Hashem, put it here and we enjoy it. But there's another level where people live on the level of the neshama. And in Eretz Yisrael, when you meet certain people, whether it's the Gedolim in Bnei Brak or the Gedolim in Har Nof, who continue on the Hankins, they're talking a whole different language. It's Mamish a different language. It's a different language. So when I struggle with certain topics, it's because I'm talking with a chutzlar, it's galus, guf, chitzonius language. I can't understand that language. And you go there like the Ramban says, you have such clarity. It's so different. Why? Because the Ramban says there is no sar, there is no kochav, there is no mazal over Eretz Yisrael. So Ribbono Shel Olam b'kvod v'atzmo. Look up the Ramban if you don't believe me. It's very lengthy. That's why he says, "Kol hadar b'chutz la'aretz dome lemi she'ein lo Eloha." Why? Because you're under the rulership in chutz la'aretz of a different power, so to speak, and God controls that power. So it's as if you don't have a God, i.e., you're under a different power, and you feel it. I feel it. If we don't feel it, then we're even further removed. We're so caught up in the chitzonius here. Our level of perfection, what's perfection? An old woman, a daughter of Rav Eliyashiv, in her cheder, a sfarim, in her house robe, and her tichel, in the most simple apartment you ever saw, with one burner, and why do I need an oven? only thing that's perfect is Ribono Shel Olam. It's very important for us when we look at society around us and the way we measure perfection. We should enjoy simchas, but the degree to which people take simchas sometimes to over the top, not necessarily with a Torah hashkafa, that's perfection. Hashem is perfection. You said exactly. So attachment to Hashem is the only perfection. King David said, as for me, Hashem's nearness in my God. That's the only thing that's perfection. And all the ways we measure perfection, Hashem Yirachim Aleinu, are the language of Chitzonius and not the language of the Neshama. And how updated. Rabbi Tinir Elson, Yisrael Elson, she didn't even know why we were there. I'm a Temba. Why are you here? She says, I should come to you for a bracha. This is what she's telling us. I was so happy we were there so my boys had an experience with this. Why do I need a tanur? I buy challah. I'm telling you, because we're talking the wrong language here. Our level of perfection, our measure of perfection is so skewed. What are we going to say? Talking about making Olam HaEmes reality, what are we going to say with the things we focused on here? I recently picked up, I don't even know, okay? So I'm telling you, I don't even know who Simcha was. In the boys' bar mitzvah year, can I know, and I have two of them. There's a lot of simchas, Baruch Hashem. And I recently picked them up. In other words, usually there's one kid having a bar mitzvah year, so I have two children having a bar mitzvah. So there's a lot of simchas, Baruch Hashem. Just using it as an example. I don't even know whose bar mitzvah, I couldn't even tell you the last name of the person whose bar mitzvah it was, okay? I don't know all these kids. I picked up from this bar mitzvah, and it made an impression on me. We have to think how we live. What are our priorities? What language are we talking? Are we living for God or for society? We just have to, I'm not talking about other people. I'm telling myself. I'm giving myself mussar. Trip to Eretz Yisrael is very important. You have to recalibrate and recalculate. The only thing that's perfect is Hashem and Torah mitzvah. So Shteiman will buy three cups. That's in the biography. You'll buy three cups of wine for Shabbos. That's it. Can't imagine him sitting with a steak. It's a joke. And enjoying his fine wine. And I also like a glass of wine Friday. And we do live a different existence. And I'm not going to be like this. But at the same time, we have to try and talk the level of the language of the neshama. I'm talking to myself. I've asked one thing from Hashem. This alone do I seek, to dwell in the house of Hashem all the days of my life. Ach ha-sha'alti m'es Hashem. Osa v'akesh. So you say the words, do we really mean it? Shifti b'veis Hashem kol yemei chayai v'achzos b'nom Hashem u'levaker b'hechol. Do I really mean it? So, a number of years ago, I don't know when it was, heard Rav Shai Shechter say, I don't remember who he quoted, on this pasuk. First you say, shifti b'veis Hashem kol yemei chayai, well, this will finish. I want to sit in the house of Hashem. And then you say, u'levaker b'hechol. So do you want to visit or do you want to sit? Which one is it? Do you understand? If you're sitting like you live there, so you're sitting like you live there. And if you're doing bikur, then you're visiting. So which one is it? What does David HaMelech want? I sit in your David. What do you want? Do you want to dwell in the house of Hashem or do you want to visit the house of Hashem? How do you resolve the stira? In the same sentence, he says two different things. One, he says, I want to dwell. One, he says, I want to visit. So how do you resolve the stira? So Rav Shechter said, I don't remember who he quoted, you want to dwell in the house of Hashem, but you always want to be there as if you're a visitor. Mm-hmm. What does that mean? A visitor goes to a place with excitement, with new eyes. It's so special. It's so wonderful here. There's a sense of awe. You're somewhere where you never were before. What happens when you're in the same place every single day? Okay, it's pretty nice here, but I've been here, I've seen that, I've been there. That's not so exciting. You want to shifti b'veis Hashem kol yemei chayai. However, how do you want to live there? Lachsus b'noam Hashem, as if I'm just a visitor. Ulevaker b'heichalo, as if it's new, as if it's exciting, as if I've never been here before, as if what I'm seeing is so wonderful. We should never be so used to it that it becomes a permanent dwelling place. It should be your permanent dwelling place. But look at it with eyes of a person who's just come to visit. Let's just finish the paragraph. This alone is good. Anything else that people consider good is vanity and deceptive emptiness. You must first develop the awareness that perfection is nothing other. If, like Shani said, perfection is Hashem, then the only way a human being, an Eved Hashem, can reach perfection is by attaching to Hashem. Once you have that awareness, then you will have a ratzon for that perfection. In other words, if you don't have the awareness of what's perfect, you don't have a ratzon for perfection. Do you understand? I don't desire to be close to God if I don't know that only God is perfect. When you have ratzon, you will fear lest the ratzon not be fulfilled. God clear? So